This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you on this Tuesday, April 23rd, live from the Detroit Economic Club. It's the luncheon here at the Motor City Casino, and yes, indeed, the keynote guest at the luncheon today is none other than Barbara McQuaid, the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, and author. And I'm thrilled to start the show with her. Barbara, it is always a pleasure. I don't always get to see you, but I'm glad we're able to sit across from each other right now.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. It's a wonderful pleasure to be with you here today.
The timing couldn't be better, not just because you are the featured speaker here, the keynote, not just because you have a, I think this is a relatively brand new book, the New York Times bestseller, How Disinformation is Sabotaging America, Attack from Within, by our guest, Barbara McQuaid. But I also want to ask you, since you're a university professor, I want to start with this, and we'll spend time on the book because it's well worth spending time on. What the heck, since you're there on campus, this case, University of Michigan, what's going on our college campuses as we speak?
Well, at least at the University of Michigan, and I think at many other college campuses, in addition to the great learning that goes on there every day, we are seeing a bit of unrest. There are students on both sides of the issue of Israel and Gaza, and there are people who want to engage in peaceful protest, but there are also concerns from the university perspective of making sure everybody feels safe. And so that's a challenge, you know, that's kind of an age-old challenge of this balance, and the book talks about this to some extent, this balance between free speech on the one hand and keeping people safe on the other. And both of those are very important values in our society. You know, I think sometimes people want to choose one or the other, and we have to have both. And so we need to have limited but reasonable restrictions on speech so that we can ensure that the university can do its business. You know, I know that there's been some concern about disruptions of ceremonies and other things like that. And so the university has put in place some policies about the when and where protests may take place. And so, just as you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, I think there are efforts to make reasonable restrictions. First Amendment rights are not absolute, as long as the limits are narrowly tailored to achieve compelling governmental interests. But exactly where those lines get drawn are hard. And so I think universities all across the country are struggling to figure out exactly where that line is.
Well, having, in this case, Jewish students being told they should go home and finish out the term from their home because they don't feel safe is not the way this is supposed to work. I'm all for freedom of speech, freedom of expressing, and all of that. But when it gets to a point where they're yelling things at Jewish kids like, this is going to happen to you, you're next, or all this other hateful speech. Here's what I don't understand. How can these highly educated kids, Columbia, Yale, wherever it is, U of M, how can they yell at people who, generally speaking, have nothing to do with what they're upset about? These people, they don't even know if the Jewish people they're yelling at agree with what Israel is doing. There are plenty of people in Israel that don't agree with what Netanyahu is doing. And yet they're yelling at these kids as if they're bearing arms and flying the jets and bombing and doing all the rest. They didn't do anything. So I'm not sure why they are screaming the horrific things they're screaming at these kids. I don't get that, and I certainly don't accept it.
Yeah, I don't understand either, but I think, you know, the importance of the balance is giving people a right to protest peacefully, but your right ends when it starts to hurt other people. And I think that's what we're seeing when, you know, students are being told to go home is unacceptable. And so I think universities have to take strong stands to make sure that everybody feels safe in their environment. And that's why, you know, time, place, and manner is all about the proper regulation for free speech. You can, in the right time, in the right place, and in the right manner, you can say whatever it is you want to say. But you can't be harassing students or making students feel unsafe in their own university.
You're on the university campus. You are a professor in the fabulous University of Michigan Law School. I was thrilled when I heard that way back when. There's hope that we're going to get through this in one piece?
I think great hope. You know, being around students actually is something that gives me a lot of hope. Our students are curious. They are mostly very respectful toward each other. They are idealistic, and they want to make the world a better place. And they're engaged in issues. So they give me a lot of hope, Paul, that our future is going to be in good hands.
Well, all right. I'm going to take that from you and your perspective. You're there on the campus. It is certainly completely different than when I went to school 100 years ago. We were not very involved in politics and all of these things around the world, let alone right here in the United States. Let's talk about attack from within, how disinformation is sabotaging America, Barbara McQuaid's new book, already doing very well. She's going to talk about that in the keynote to speech today. Tell me how you came up with this concept, the idea, and a little bit about the book.
Well, the idea for the book really comes from my work as a national security prosecutor and professor. I've been working in the national security space since 9/11, and I've seen the threat to our country evolve from ISIS to Al-Qaeda to ISIS to Russia and China and other things. And I now think one of the greatest threats to our national security is disinformation that is coming from within our own country. And the thesis of the book is that, you know, we have to have truth to be able to have a democracy. A democracy depends on an informed electorate. And I think that, you know, we've certainly seen lies in the past politically. We've had, you know, propaganda and spin and outright lies to us about
Mussolini and Hitler. You go all the way back.
Sure. I talk about some of the history there. But what I think makes the problem so acute right now are two things. One is the technology that allows people to send a false claim online and reach people instantly, to reach millions of people, and to do so anonymously. And I think the other thing that is happening right now is because we are so polarized, although some people are actually falling for these false claims, there are other people who actually don't care. All they care about is whether their tribe is winning, and they don't really care about what the facts are. And I think that we have to think for ourselves, even if it goes against the grain and we think it might go against our tribe, we need to choose our facts. And instead, I see both parties really demanding political purity and lining up on every issue on whether you're on the blue team or the red team. And I think to be a successful democracy, we need to choose each individual issue ourselves and decide what we think is the best course for moving our country forward. It's not just about one side winning or another.
Right, and that's what it's become. I mean, let's face it. The Democrats work to make sure the Republicans don't do well. The Republicans work to make sure the Democrats don't do well. They forget that we're sitting here in the cheap seats watching them not accomplish anything they're supposed to be accomplishing for us, their employer. And this is a problem, and people are catching on to it and I think pretty upset about it.
Yeah, and that's the point of the book, really, is to sort of dissect these tactics that have been used throughout history, because I think that if people can recognize them, identify them, name them, we can defeat them and be less likely to be manipulated by them, so that we can get back to a government of, by, and for the people.
You do attack the whole concept of why America is particularly vulnerable to the disinformation you're talking about in the book, How Disinformation is Sabotaging America, Attack from Within by Barbara McQuaid. Why are we more vulnerable? Because we have free speech?
Yes, and it goes back to this very topic that we started with about free speech on campus. It's a really difficult thing to get this right, because we all treasure our First Amendment rights of free speech, whether you're on the left or the right or anywhere in between. Our ability to speak out against our government is what makes us a free society. And so we cherish that. And so as a result, I think those who want to prevent any limits on free speech or social media regulation or other things will accuse anyone of trying to impose any reasonable limits on speech as censorship. You know, if you are telling me I can't, protest about, you know, Gaza or Israel, you are silencing me. You are censoring me. If we want to have reasonable regulations on social media to prevent the kinds of disinformation we saw from Russia in 2016, the tech companies cry out that it's censorship. Well, it's not censorship if there's a compelling governmental interest and the limitation is narrowly tailored to achieve that. And so I think we need to free ourselves from these labels like censorship and have a meaningful debate about what these things really mean.
Attack from Within, the publisher, Seven Stories Press. The author, our guest, Barbara McQuaid, who we all know and remember as former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan and currently professor at the University of Michigan Law School, keynote speaker here today at the Detroit Economic Club. And you've stayed with us, and I appreciate your time, but I think they need you right now.
Very good.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Paul.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
As we continue on WJR. I always look forward to speaking with my next guest. I just don't get to do it in person very much. Probably the next time will be Mackinac.
Yes.
Sandy Baruch Oz, Greater Detroit Regional Chamber Policy Conference, which is coming up sooner than I might guess.
A month and a half. I always, one of my highlights of Mackinac is getting to sit down with you and talk about all the movers and shakers that are there and all the things that we've got going on in Lansing and in our office and our customer service work.
Your customer service, from my own experience, Angela Benadar, I'm a loser when it comes to doing stuff on computers. I know you're not supposed to say that. You're never supposed to say bad things to yourself about yourself.
You're self-deprecating. It's a charming thing.
but she's helped me so much.
Good.
It's really something. I haven't even properly introduced you, our Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, Madam Secretary. You are moderating today's talk with Barbara McQuaid.
I am. Barbara and I go way back.
We've
been doing this work for a long time, and I'm really excited about her book, Attack from Within. It's exactly the type of message we need citizens to hear as we advance towards the November elections, because it's all about the real threat to our election security today, which is this mis- and disinformation.
You've talked about that. You've talked with us on the show about it. What can citizens do to fight the disinformation that is squarely in the sights of Barbara McQuaid's Attack from Within, and it's been in your sights ever since I've known you?
Yeah, well, as Barb said, we need an informed and engaged electorate to have a healthy democracy, and we all have a responsibility to become critical consumers of information, especially what we see on social media, and to seek out trusted sources for information. If you hear something that sounds funny, there is plenty of opportunities to validate or verify what you're reading, and then we encourage people, once you verify or bust a myth, that you spread the truthful information, not repeat the lies. So we have a website, michigan.gov/vote, that has a myth-busting page that you can read through and get all that you need to know about how truly secure our elections are. And then we also encourage people to be an election worker, a poll worker. That's your best chance to find out the truth about our democracy and to know there are forces out there, domestic and international, that are trying to confuse voters with misinformation and to not be fooled by it.
How's that going, being a poll worker? There have been some ups and downs. These people are donating their services, and sometimes people just beat them up.
Well,
it reminds me of the MDOT road workers. Mm-hmm. They're trying to fix the roads for us, and people are throwing water bottles at them.
Yeah, we've got to keep those folks safe, and we've got to protect the people who protect democracy. So we actually passed a bill that's signed into law now that makes it a crime to threaten an election worker in their line of work, recognizing that the result of a lot of these lies that have been spread for political agendas is that people take it out on election workers and threaten or harass them. And it's really, these are men and women, Democrats, independents, Republicans, neighbors, churchgoers, folks who I think are simply, as you said, trying to serve their community and protect democracy. And we're going to do a good job protecting them this year.
Jocelyn Benson, our Michigan Secretary of State, with us. She's playing a key role today as a moderator of the talk with Barbara McQuaid. You also partner with the Committee for Safe and Secure Elections. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, we do a lot of work with a number of nonprofit and nonpartisan organizations that have an expertise in what we need to bring to Michigan. So in this example, we've actually brought in Tina Barton, who is a former clerk from Rochester Hills. And she, through our partnership, is working to bring in law enforcement and first responders and clerks to a number of tabletop exercises around the state to prepare for November. We go through various scenario planning. What if artificial intelligence hits your community? What do you do? What if there's a disruption at a polling place? What can you do? And so partnerships with nonprofits help us that have a specific expertise, in this case of making elections more safe, help us to ensure we're providing our clerks with all the resources they need to do their jobs.
It is unfortunate, but it is the sign of the times with everything that's going on right now, especially what we're seeing on university campuses and the disinformation and the misinformation and the just plain lack of understanding. Mm. You know, if I talk to people who came to this country from other countries, no one loves America as much as people who had lived elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Some of these kids who grew up coddled in America don't get it. Or they couldn't possibly be yelling death to America, in this case, death to Israel. It's the sign of the times right now. And the sign of the times, too, that the people who administer democracy need support and protection from intimidation and violence. It's a sad point that we're at right now. And do you see an end to this?
Yeah, I think the end is found within us, because this is a tool, a tactic that is impacting all of us, this tool of others, adversaries to our country, frankly, I believe, international adversaries who don't want to see America thrive, are through social media and other mechanisms of technology spreading misinformation to divide us, to cause discord, to sow seeds of doubt, to create chaos and confusion. That's really the tactic here of election interference that we're anticipating this year. And so I think we need to know that reality and not be fooled by it, not be caught up in the use of misinformation to divide us, but instead recognize that we've got far more in common than we do differences, particularly in this great country, and we are best when we are united together, despite perhaps differences that we may have.
We have differences, and that's fine. We have arguments. That's okay, too, to a certain degree. But the thing that concerns me is we want America to thrive, but I'm not sure that the Democrats and the Republicans want America to survive, or thrive, I should say, because it seems as if both parties work to make sure the other party isn't successful. And that is very bothersome to me.
I agree. Public servants need to serve the public, all the public first, and we all need to work together.
Here we got a guy now, a House Speaker, who worked with the opposing side to get something done, and now they're going to throw him out of his office, which is ridiculous.
Well, that's why voters can make a stand and say, we're going to support elected leaders on both sides of the aisle that do solve problems and reject those who just put party above country.
Do you fear what's happening within terms of mis- and disinformation, or from other countries? Which do you fear the most?
Oh, other countries, especially because they have an incentive in interfering in our democracy and making us weaker as a country. They have a clear incentive, Russia does, to use these tactics to weaken us as an international power. And the answer, the response, is found in the power of all of us, that we all have an opportunity to be truth tellers, to push back against the partisanship, to not allow this misinformation to divide us, but instead celebrate what brings us together. And so my hope, and I'm hopeful because of this, is the strength of America has always been found in our people. And if we re-engage with that, see each other as people as opposed to political opponents or foes, we can emerge out of this moment, I hope, with a healthier community and democracy than ever before.
Do you ever want to run for governor?
We'll have that conversation after we get through the 2024 election cycle.
Okay, good answer. Madam Secretary, Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, moderating today's talk with Barb McQuaid and spending a little time with us here on WJR in Focus, and I thank you for that.
Always a joy to see you. Thank you.
Go in there and, they say in show business, break a leg. I'll say
knock them dead.
Knock them dead is what I'll say.
I'll take it. I'll do my best.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Thank you. As we continue on WJR. Always great to be here. We thank Steve Gregorian for having us as the only broadcast facility that's invited time and time again to these wonderful Detroit Economic Club meetings. This one, as Mr. Announcer just said, featuring Barbara McQuaid, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, professor at the University of Michigan Law School. I was glad to be able to ask her a couple of questions on what she thought was happening in our college campuses. Now, we don't agree on a lot of things politically oftentimes. So anyway, it was good to hear from her. And then Madam Secretary of State to Jocelyn as well. She's in there right now, in fact, helping out with being the moderator on the program. We also thank Lloyd Jackson. Lloyd was here a moment ago, but he's doing his duties. Lloyd is up on the stage doing the WJR business briefs. And this goes back years. WJR's had that kind of relationship with the Detroit Economic Club. All right, we welcome now Dr. David Rosenberg, chair of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience at Wayne State University. I mentioned this on the air the other day because we heard in a story on the air with Dick Hafner a doctor actually say, yes, the radiation from your cell phone does have an effect on your brain. And I thought, geez, people have often wondered about it, but now they're saying it's happening. Now what? What do we do? Let's find out right now. Dr. Rosenberg, this is Paul W. Smith. Welcome to Focus.
Great to be with you, Paul W.
What do we do? I mean, the cell phone is now a part of our daily living without question.
There's no question about it. And this is something we at Wayne State University and the Detroit Medical Center have given a lot of attention to for quite some time. And the way I look at it, Paul W., is that digital devices, the cell phone, can be a wonderful servant, but it's a cruel and crippling master. So if you and I want to see what the temperature is in Honduras, we punch in a few things in the cell phone and there we have the information. But when it becomes something that takes the place of everything else, what we're doing now, talking, socializing, then it becomes the cruel, crippling master. And as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, what we're seeing is just a hijacking of these children and adolescents' brain, the brain's reward center, the CEO, its processing center. And we've actually done some brain imaging studies where the brain scan of a child or adolescent who is addicted to the internet looks virtually the same as someone who's addicted to crack cocaine or heroin.
Wow. That's amazing.
Scary, right?
It's really scary. So we absolutely have proof in what you're saying, and I know you look at it from a different standpoint in terms of the overutilization and dependence on the cell phones and in your psychiatry practice and behavioral neuroscience sciences at Wayne State University. But the cell phones, even cordless phones, are using the radio frequency radiation, RF, to send signals, and it's sending out radiation that's going into our heads. But we'd still, I can't get anyone to say we definitely know this causes cancer, for example.
No, and that's beyond my level of expertise as a child and adolescent psychiatrist. But what I can say is that none of us would be willing to unsupervised, leave a loaded gun, whatever your political persuasion or feelings about the Second
right.
Amendment, with kids, adolescents, and just sitting there, or a bottle of whiskey. You know, there has to be some realistic societal investigation, because in many ways, we don't know the full extent of what's happening. Now, what is exciting to those of us who are doing some of these studies is that the brain damage or brain abnormalities that appear to be caused by excessive use of cell phones, digital devices, appear to be reversible if adolescents, for example, go on a 2 to 4 week digital fast. Hmm. So that's encouraging, but the bottom line is we know so little about this, and this is really more than a psychiatry or a neurology or cancer doctor issue. It's a societal issue and what we will accept. And we like to say that it's all about the children, but this is an opportunity for us to really do something about that.
What do you suggest we do? That we, in fact, have these digital fasts a couple of 2-3 times a year for our kids and for ourselves?
I think, you know, we are so suggestible, and especially our children and adolescents, they look to us for the lead. We now can't move, it seems, without a cell phone. If we forget the cell phone, we have to go back and get it. People are getting phantom texts where they think that something has vibrated and maybe this is a text. I think the first thing is, I believe, that knowledge heals. So we absolutely have to, as a society, put some guardrails in the same way people did with cigarettes, tobacco. It may seem like an impossible task because of how prevalent the digital devices are. They're everywhere. But I think that if we work together, knowing the stakes and what the repercussions are, that's really our chance. But it's going to take politicians, policy leaders, people like you. I can't thank you enough for shining a light on this, Paul W. Professionals, parents. I always like to tell parents when they come see me about a digitally addicted child or adolescent that parenthood is not a democracy. At best, it's a cruel, at best, it's a benevolent dictatorship. And
right.
We, the parents, are the dictators.
I'll tell you something, Dr. David Rosenberg. When you talked about the phantom phone contact, everybody here looked at each other, because who among us has carried a phone in our front pocket and then felt the buzz and go, oh, I'm getting a call, and you reach into the front pocket and your phone isn't there. But we but we felt the buzz. We would have bet $1 million that we were getting a phone call.
You're right.
So you were spot on with that and everything else. We thank you for that. We hope that we've sounded an alarm that will, resonate with parents, because you're right. We're in charge. We are the ones who decide what our kids do or don't do. And we better maybe take the reins here, take the horns, and take over. Dr. David Rosenberg, MD, Chair of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurosciences at Wayne State University. We will look forward to talking with you again, Doctor.
Thank you. I look forward to it, Paul W.
Thank you, sir, as we continue on WJR. With good news like this, General Motors has beaten Wall Street expectations, delivering first quarter net income of $3 billion on revenue of $43 billion. Very excited about that. Very proud of the hardworking men and women of General Motors is the president, Mark Royce. Congratulations, Mark.
Thank you, Paul W. I'm really proud of the whole team. You know, this is a lot of hard work. And as you know, our business has a lot of stakeholders, dealers, you know, everybody who works so hard to bring the product out, all of our staffs. So it's really been a team effort here. And I just couldn't be prouder of everybody who works so hard.
Well, it's really good news after some rough news and some tough negotiations and getting all of these things together. But you've increased your guidance for the year of adjusted earnings to be in a range of $12.5 billion to $14.5 billion, up from 12 and 14. And you expect your net income for the year to be between $10.1 billion and $11.5 billion. Above the previous guidance of 9.8 and 11.2 billion. So this is the beginning of more good news.
We think so. We think, we've done a lot of things from a cost standpoint to keep it flat. And that's really important, because that means we're not taking it away from things in the car, but rather looking at our business, the way we run it, and driving efficiency. And I think that goes all the way into the dealer channel, that where we sell the vehicle. So it's been a really good discipline on it as we grow, you know, the top line, as you mentioned here, on a revenue basis. But also, you know, and I don't know if a lot of people are talk about it quite as much, but the automotive free cash flow is, you know, $1.1 billion, and the consensus was, you know, $200 million. So in a cyclical business here, where we're generating that kind of cash flow, that's a very, very positive thing. And I think a lot of analysts may have doubted whether, you know, any OEM that is a what we call legacy OEM is able to do that. So that's a very good, healthy sign to the business. And, you know, as you might expect, this all goes back to product. So if you don't have things that people really want, then that's a problem. So I don't care if it's internal combustion engine or EV or whatever. We're driving things and designing things and making things that people really want.
Mark Royce, president of General Motors. I'll give you another statistic that proves you're making things people really want. Ninth consecutive year, you've led in loyalty to your brand.
Yeah, that's, every point of loyalty is so hard fought, and you know that. And that starts with having, you know, our brands at the very top of customer satisfaction and sales and service. And that's really where it starts. And our CCA group, which is just brilliant at it, you know, that's where you make the hay, you know, and really take care of people. And people will be back to buy another vehicle when you have that. And you keep doing you know, big redesigns and big things that people really look forward to from a vehicle standpoint, then you get it all. So, yep, 9 years.
One of the big things has to be the incredible home run that the Lyric has turned out to be, leading the charge and beating a lot of other cars, other luxury cars, like even Mercedes.
Yes, absolutely. That we have a real winner with Lyric, and we're getting you know, what we call a conquest rate, which is people who have never bought Cadillac or General Motors coming to the brand with that car. So, you know, over 50% of the buyers here are new to GM, which is, you know, that's a growth story right there. And, you know, we're not discounting the car. We're not giving it away. There's some of our competition that's doing that, particularly the EV space. But our LTM platform and, you know, our range of 319 miles on that particular car, all those things in a great price point is something where we're very proud of what the residual value is, which is the value you get when you trade it back in. We haven't done anything with that because we're not cutting price and we're not giving them away. So there's huge value in the car and people see it and they want it, which is, that's the magic formula.
6% increase in retail sales without those incentives you just alluded to. So that's very well done as far as for business goes also. And I'm shocked to see that your EVs are up 36% quarter over quarter. That's a surprise to me.
Yeah, well, you know, if you look at it isn't talked about a lot, but you know, if you look at, we sold a lot of Bolts. If you remember that car, it was a very low cost, very efficient, high value car. We had to take it out of production to retool our Lake Orion plant, and then we're bringing it back here this next year out of a different plant. But it's going to be a brand new car. And even without that volume, as we bring on our LTM products like Lyric, like, you know, our new Silverado EV out of Factory Zero, you know, all of those cars that are coming online are really starting to go. And so we just, you know, began delivering again the Blazer. So that's a very hot product for us as well. So I think you're going to see a whole breadth of portfolio of EVs that, you know, have the range, they have the right price point, they've got to die for styling and performance. And again, you know, we're going to deliver EVs that no one else can. So that's a big statement, the 36%.
Well, and just to give our listeners an idea, the Cadillac Lyric sales increased 499% from 968 to 5,800. So it really is on fire. Do you see any worries or chances of having to move production outside of the United States or any layoffs or anything like that in the future based on your increase in expenses now?
I don't. And I could tell you, you know, we're our footprint is set. We're going to be fully capacitized here with what we have in our existing plant structure. And, you know, of course, we're adding our cell plants, which a lot of our competitors are buying cells and packs from other people. But, you know, our cell and modular production is up 300%. So that's really gating our production. And there are places like Lordstown, Ohio, Spring Hill, Tennessee. And then we're just now getting ready to bring online Lansing, our cell plant in Lansing. And so, you know, it's up, onward and upward on that, on the cell production and our footprint, which is largely, as you know, here in the United States. So that's
you see it staying. You see it staying that way. Okay.
I do. Well, yeah, we're going to capacitize what we got big time.
Okay. Yep. And finally, are you excited about the move from the Renaissance Center into the Hudson Building?
I'm very excited. And you know, the draft, everybody's, you know, covered the draft, including yourself, which is, there's a lot of excitement downtown.
Yeah,
so
there is.
There's a lot. And, you know, I still love the backdrop of the Renaissance Center, and I still love having our logo on it. So that's not going to change tomorrow or anything. But, you know, we're excited about what the redevelopment could be and look like for the riverfront. You know, we put $1 billion into that riverfront, and it's constantly ranked the best, you know, right now. So we're not doing anything here that we want to disturb any of that other than make it better if we can. And the Hudson's piece of this with the Gilberts, I couldn't be more excited. It's, you know, if there's anybody that can look at how we do the Ren Sen, but also bring up you know, a historic site and the class and glamour that that building has. I took a tour before we announced it, and oh my gosh, they've done just a spectacular job. So, you know, couldn't be happier for that. And you know, hopefully we bring some excitement to that part of town too.
Absolutely. I'm excited for the opportunities to expand some of the things the Renaissance Center hasn't done yet, but could do. And no one better than the Gilberts to put that together. Mark Royce is president of General Motors, and he'll have a smile all day. Then he gets right back to work as they beat Wall Street expectations once again. Congratulations, Mark, to you and all the hardworking men and women of General Motors.
Thank you so much. We got great people, and that's what makes it happen. Thank you, Paul W.
We continue in Focus on WJR. Well, it's great to be here, that's for sure. We thank Steve Gregorian for inviting us always to be at these Detroit Economic Club luncheons here today at the Motor City Casino. No one else in the media is here, so we're thrilled to have the responsibility to bring you, in this case today, Barbara McQuaid, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, and the moderator for today's talk also joined us earlier, our Madam Secretary of State, Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, and lots of other great guests as well, including Mark Royce, we just had before the news, as GM beats the profit expectations in the first quarter and has increased their guidance for 2024, which is all good news. We want to have as much good news as we can. It's not always easy. Relentless positive radio is what Rick Snyder used to call us, and that's what we still try to do after his relentless positive work as the governor of the great state of Michigan. The team, bigger today when we're on the road. We've got executive producer Mike Parsons here with us. Daniel Mason back in the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building with Rich Luzinski, WJR Traffic and Weather First. And then here on location, Tony Butler and Dave Rieger. And they help put it all together, and we appreciate that. You can stream us at WJR.com, or I hope you have the WJR app, and you can get our podcast. You can hear all those interviews that I just mentioned a moment ago, and I hope you'll do that. Do you have your NFL One Pass yet? Because it's T-minus 2 days, and we're going to be there with the whole NFL One Pass and all of the excitement all throughout the day. WJR will be broadcasting. You can go to visitdetroit.com, Claude Molinari's spot, if you will, visitdetroit.com, download the NFL One Pass. Don't pay. You don't have to pay anything at all.
And you're not going to want to download that once you're actually downtown with all those people taking up cell phone signal. You're going to want to do that at home before.
Do that before you get there. Something I wanted to mention. Now, we started the show right off with our interview with Barb McQuaid, so we didn't have our little talk around here, but I do want to mention I spoke with Gregory Eaton earlier. He is one of the owners of Metro Cars, one of the founders of Metro Cars. He's got, I think he still has a restaurant in Lansing, and he does lots of things. He's just an all-around good guy. If the name sounds familiar, well, a lot of people know Gregory Eaton, and for good reason. But he also is the guy that's been to every Super Bowl since the beginning, which is pretty phenomenal. Well, today he is receiving from Wayne County a Lifetime Achievement Award.
All right.
So I don't know if you can find the audience, Danielle, the applause, but if anyone deserves the applause, it would be Gregory Eaton with his Lifetime Achievement Award from Wayne County. That's really nice. I mean, he's just a great guy, and he deserves that. Now, on the other hand, a guy I used to work with in Monroe, I hope he's listening because he's never heard me mention his name. The guy I used to work with at WVMO in Monroe when I was in high school, he was a little older, so he was out of high school, but he heard me say how much I would love one of these wonderful riding mowers I'm doing the commercials for, the new Cub Cadet lawn tractor from Weingarts. And so what's he do? He rubs it in my face.
He's flexing on you, as the kids would say.
Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Flexing?
Yeah.
He sends me a picture of himself riding on his riding lawnmower. Come on, Jim. Give the guy a break. Okay, you got a couple acres.
You're going to have to get your own now and drag race him.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, he was one of the guys that got a Corvette early on in Monroe. And I still wonder how he worked at WVMO and could afford a Corvette. And I worked at WVMO and worked three jobs and had to go to community college.
You had to drive a Pinto.
Well, I never did have a Pinto, but I, you know, I had other cars, little cars and all that. But anyway, Jim, thank you for the picture. I hope you're listening so that it looks like quite a riding mower.
I think every guy would love a riding lawnmower if you had the land and the money for it.
All I keep saying when I do the Weingarten's commercial, and I mean it, if you thought about it, if you think about it, do it now. You never know what the size of your lawn is going to become, and mine has become very small, and it would look ridiculous if I were on this little sliver of land with a riding mower. But I always wanted one of those. I never had a – did any of you guys have a go-kart?
No. I always wanted those Power Wheels that were big in the 90s. But I was never lucky enough to get one.
Power Wheels. Were those plastic things?
Yeah. They went like 2 miles an hour or something.
Yeah, I don't think of a Power Wheel when I think of a go-kart.
No, but and it's funny because even after you get your driver's license, you still love the go-karts, even though you can drive a car yourself legally.
Well, many years ago, and I don't know if it was Ford or General Motors, one of them sent me out to a couple of different driving schools that they supported. One was the Bondurant School, and we drove around in, I can't remember what the cars were, it was a very long time ago, and I learned how to do this driving. And another one was out in Utah.
Wow.
Could have been Red Barber. I don't remember, but here's what I remember. That real race car drivers came there to practice on what they called shifter carts. These are go-karts.
Okay.
You don't have a seatbelt. You just sit in there, and you're so low on the ground, it is, unless you run into something, you're not flying off that thing. And I could have run into something, but the shifter carts were incredible.
How fast would those go?
Oh, well, you felt like you're going 150 miles an hour because you're on the ground. You are, like, so low to the ground. I have no idea, but they went fast. They went fast. Rieger, you seem to know about this.
You ever go to MIS and take a few laps around the track?
You know, I've taken laps around MIS, and I've taken laps around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Okay.
I can't remember which one it was, but I can tell you this. One of them or both of them, those banked turns are way more banked than they look
right
when you're watching the race as opposed to when you're in a car going on.
I got one for you.
Yeah, Tony.
We took the Barth on the track.
The Barth?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You don't know this, folks, but we've talked about the Barth over the years, but not lately.
Yep, we
This was a motorhome that we did broadcasting from. It was perfect. No bathroom. What else? It was like,
and you guys took that on a bank turn?
Oh yeah, but we took the whole track.
I was not
we
there.
The whole track.
You took it around the track. That was living dangerously.
Barth sounds like something I would do on one of those bank turns. I get motion sickness.
You might Barth. Yeah. Okay. So why were you on the track with the Barth?
Because that's what we used to bring it in.
You had to come around the track to get to where you were doing the broadcast.
Right. We used to come out from the back to come to the front.
I'll tell you, I used to do a broadcast from MIS on Saturdays. I did all these other things all the time. I just felt I had to. So I'm doing the broadcast from MIS, and in the old days, before WJR stepped in with Lansing and fixed this, it was a mess getting in and out of MIS. Do you remember? It was a mess. We fixed it. I can't remember how, but we fixed it with the legislators in Lansing. But when it was a mess, I used to be taken in by helicopter.
Yep.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm not a great helicopter passenger.
No, I wouldn't be either.
Because, you know, even with an airplane, you go, well, you can glide if you lose power. With a helicopter, you lose power, you fall like a rock. Now, helicopter pilots would say to me, oh, no, we auto-rotate or some, they had some name for it. I never saw it work, but they, you know, because the blade would still be going around and they'd come down soft, whatever. This helicopter pilot, sadly, really wanted to be a WJR helicopter pilot. So he would always dress up the helicopter with WJR stickers and stuff. And then he would show me pictures of the helicopter with all that stuff while he was flying the helicopter. And I, you know, when you fly a helicopter, you need both hands and both legs, and you should be watching.
Eyes on the sky, sir.
And I go, you know, can you show me that after we land, you know? And then he'd say, oh, yeah, see over there? That's where that plane went down. And I go, because of those wires, we're looking like we're going right at those wires? Oh, yeah, I'll pull up. Sadly, years later, I'm watching a news story, and two helicopters following a police chase came together, crashed together, and the helicopter pilots were killed, and one of them was the guy who used to drive me to Michigan International Speedway.
Wow.
Was that Craig?
Craig Smith.
Yeah.
Yep, it was.
Yeah.
It was indeed. Wow. Got a lot of stories. That's why Kim always says on other people, when are you going to write that book? I don't know. When I learned to spell. I'm on the radio because I can't spell. I know there's spell check, but have you noticed how spell check changes things horribly? I mean, they just change the word. They don't just correct the spelling.
Yeah, auto-incorrect.
That's what it really is. All right, 114, lots more to do here from this wonderful event, the fabulous Detroit Economic Club luncheon at the Motor City Casino.
WJR Traffic and Weather First is sponsored by the 39 Steps at the Riverbank Theater. Head to Marine City this May for a zany, fast-paced whodunit based on Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps. Four actors play 150 characters in this brilliant mystery packed with nonstop laughs. Get your tickets and overnight package deals at ThumbCoastTheaters.com. That's ThumbCoastTheaters.com. A disabled vehicle blocks your right lane on I-75 southbound at Springwell Street. Single lane closures continue on 19 Mile in both directions between Clinton River Road and Shaner Road. Expect delays on I-275 northbound between 8 Mile and I-696. And construction blocks your left lane on I-696 westbound between Losser and Telegraph. Folks are backed up to Evergreen Road. Now WJR Weather First from the Weather Channel. Here's your forecast.
Watching some rain showers and weather radar come in ahead of a cold front marching through and dropping the numbers tomorrow behind the front. 59 this afternoon, 40 tonight with some light rain showers. Morning clouds tomorrow. Cooler north winds, high 49, low 32 tomorrow night. From the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Scott Lariamore on 760 WJR, where Michigan comes to talk.
As we continue here on this beautiful Tuesday, April 23rd, we welcome back a great helpful guest who has helped us all along. And they have special duties, like so many law enforcement people do, with the draft, which is T-minus 2 days or so. Lieutenant Mike Shaw from the Michigan State Police. He's going to share with us how MSP working with local partners for the draft, and they've got a few requests that I think are very, very reasonable. Mike, happy to have you here. Happy Detroit NFL week, if you will.
It's definitely right around the corner. I think we've been looking at this for a couple of years now, and it's hard to believe that this weekend's it. It is.
We're
looking forward to it.
And you're right. You've been working on it. Detroit Police Chief James White is working. Everybody's been working on it, including our Michigan State Police. Tell me some of the things, some of the ways that you will be involved.
So for us, I don't think people really realize the partnership that we have here in the Metro Detroit area compared to other parts of the country. We've been very fortunate to work a lot of large events, from the fireworks to the Grand Prix to concerts, World Series, things like that. So this isn't the first rodeo for all of us. And we all work together. I know you kind of...
I should mention, because I don't want to forget him. He's a great guy. Including Wayne County Sheriff Raphael Washington.
Yep. Absolutely. And Mike Bouchard is on board with us as well. So,
oh, good. The Oakland County Sheriff. Okay. Yep. And Christopher Ray from the FBI. You really do have everybody involved.
We've got everybody that's part of it. And DPD put out a call and said, hey, we want to work together with this, and everybody said, what do you need? So for us, we're going to have troopers up in the Grand Circus Park area up by Comerica Park. You'll see troopers on foot up there. You'll see them on bicycles, our aviation unit, bomb squad, canine unit, explosive detection dogs. You name every asset that we have is going to be out there. And then some things that people won't see. We will have some undercover officers that will be in the crowds, just kind of monitoring, making sure everybody's up on their best behavior and nobody's doing anything that's going to ruin the fun for everybody else.
We should mention, too, the Detroit Fire Department. They're setting up four medical tents and have 6 additional ambulances during the 3-day event. Everybody's been working hard to make this a spectacular event, extravaganza. And, of course, we've all been deputized to be real ambassadors to our fellow citizens, as well as people coming in from around the country and around the world, so that everybody can have a great time. And it's something we all should be taking very seriously, because as we've heard and as we've talked about, in many ways this is a dress rehearsal for other great events that might decide to come to Detroit. And when they do come to Detroit, they bring hundreds of thousands of people, which means they bring their money, and we're being able to benefit from other people's money.
Absolutely. One of the first events I worked when I became in the department was the Super Bowl. So I've seen the Super Bowl here and the World Series and different events that we have here. And they always go off without a hitch, and we're hoping that this will continue on. But, you know, we need the public support, too, to kind of be our eyes and ears out there. We have no intelligence whatsoever of any, you know, nefarious actions or actors or anything like that. But we still want people to take a look. And, you know, if you see something that you think is suspicious, go grab a trooper or a DPD officer or, you know, a deputy and say, hey, you know, I'm not sure if this is a big deal or not, but, you know, this is going on over here. We'll check it out. And, you know, if it is something that's suspicious, we'll take care of it. And if it's not, you know, everything's okay. So we're just asking the public too, and just to remember as well, and I know the chief is really hounded on this, you know, we want you to come down and have fun, but you can't bring a gun. So, you know, it's yeah. pretty
you should be able to have fun. I'm just saying, as a big believer in the amendment and as a gun owner, I think you should be able to come down and have fun without bringing your gun.
Right, without bringing a gun. And, you know, there's going to be, you know, detectors out there, and you can't have it on the footprint. It's just like going to a football game at Ford Field. Yeah. Even if you're a CPL holder, you can't bring a firearm on the Ford Field, and you can't bring it onto the NFL footprint. And we kind of want to warn people that there are people that look around, and when you kind of try to get into a place and you got your CPL with you, they kind of watch you go back to your car and put your gun in your trunk or whatever. You're a good target for a crime, right? So what we don't want is stolen guns out there from somebody that left it. So just leave it at home, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, there's so much police protection out there. We will see a lot of it, but there's a lot of it we will not see. And that's even more comforting to know that you're out there. There is another issue. Lieutenant Mike Shaw, Michigan State Police. It's so funny because some people love the Detroit sign. Some people don't love the Detroit sign. But it appears that a lot of people still want to pull off the side of the expressway, stop, and take pictures of it.
And that is something we are seeing, not a whole lot of, but, you know, it is something that I've talked about. I've talked with you about it. I've talked, you know, other media outlets about, you know, not getting out on the freeway and standing out there and things like that. The traffic is so fast when you're out there that you just don't know. But, you know, the Detroit sign, for some reason, that's what caught all of our attention as far as not standing in the middle of the freeway. So we just want to remind people, yes, the sign, some people, like you said, like it. Some people want to take pictures of it so they can make fun of it, whatever it is. Just don't do it on the freeway. If you can go up topside, as we call it, and get a picture up on the service drive, you're better off doing that, because a lot of times if you're out there kind of gawking at the sign, other drivers are gawking at you, gawking at the sign, and then next you know somebody's going to get hurt.
It's,
so that
can be
that's
very dangerous.
Part.
Yeah, that Absolutely. Is the sad part. And I got to tell you, by the way, I finally drove by it, and I thought it was great. I thought it was very nice. It looks totally different in person than it has on all of the television pictures I've seen of it. I don't know why, but television changes things, and it really changes the sign. Sign looks fine. Stop comparing it to the Hollywood sign. Why would we want to compare ourselves to anything in California, the land of fruits and nuts? Are you kidding me? I mean, it's just this is our Detroit sign, for goodness sakes.
Right. And it looks really nice at night when it's lit up and stuff. It's definitely eye catching. But we just want, you know, people to be safe when they're out there taking a look at it.
I've not yet seen it at night, but I will, I'm sure. But I also know, folks, do not get out of your car. Don't pull over to the side of the expressway You get out of your car and take a picture, and you're asking for trouble. And it's the kind of trouble that you do not win in. Car versus photographer, it's not a good match. So please, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Anything else before we let you go, Lieutenant?
Nope. Just download that NFL One Pass app. That's going to get you to where you go, and realize that starting tomorrow, a lot of downtown is going to be closed off to traffic. So if you have to go down there for work or anything, really plan ahead and just, you know, be careful. Have a good time down there, and you know, represent whichever football team you cheer for. I hope you have a good draft.
I hope it's good for everyone. And by the way, go to Claude Molinari's visitdetroit.com. Visitdetroit.com for the NFL One Pass. Totally free. Don't pay any money for that. And you'll get all kinds of other helpful information, parking information, entrance areas, all of that. And I want to thank you in advance and salute you, Lieutenant Mike Shaw, and all the hardworking men and women of the Michigan State Police, the Wayne County Sheriff, Sheriff Raphael Washington, Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard, Detroit City Police Chief James White, the people from the FBI, the people from all the people who are going to make sure that we're safe. I thank you all, and thank you, Mike, for coming on with us.
Thank you, Paul W. We always appreciate your support.
Lieutenant Mike Shaw, Michigan State Police. Everybody's getting ready for the fabulous event that is now T-minus 2 days away, Detroit's NFL Draft, and WJR will have it all. Stay with us at 129. You know, winter can do funny things to your roof. You might say, well, we didn't have that bad of a winter. Well, the ice, the snow, the freezing, the thawing, the freezing, the thawing, the freezing, the thawing does cause your shingles to become brittle and crack if they're old, which can lead to major roofing problems if not caught early. Best advice I can give you is to call Victor's Home Solutions today and schedule an appointment for a spring roof inspection. I say today because Victor's appointment calendar is going to fill up pretty fast as the weather gets warmer. Schedule your appointment before the rush and get peace of mind knowing your roof is ready to handle the spring rains. And if they're not ready, you have a plan to fix them. If your roof has any problems, I can guarantee you the spring thunderstorms will find those problems, and you want to get any roof issues taken care of before it's too late and your home suffers significant. If I'm not mistaken, that's the dating game theme. It's a new a rejoiner that we have. Well, you know, they're full of surprises here as we continue broadcasting from the fabulous soundboard of the Motor City Casino, invited by Steve Gregorian of the Detroit Economic Club. And today, a special day with the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, Barbara McQuaid. And right after Barbara, we spoke to Madam Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. And now we're speaking with Howard Handler. He's the president of 313 Presents. Howard, nice to see you.
Great to be here.
You have a lot planned. 313 Presents is very much involved, and you've got an amazing summer and fall concert lineup planned for us. Can you tell us about some of those exciting concerts?
Would love to. We're almost a week out from kicking off Detroit's summer concert season. On May 2nd at Pine Knob, we're presenting Primus, Pucifer, and A Perfect Circle. And that's setting the stage for just a great outdoor amphitheater season and concert season. We've got more than 70 shows announced at Pine Knob, Michigan Lottery Amphitheater, and Meadowbrook, and many more to come.
You know, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. It shows my age, which I'm proud of. How come I've never heard of Primus or Pucifer? Are those bands?
Those are incredible rock bands.
Primus was huge, like 90s, I would say, in their heyday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But that's the fun thing about the concert season is we have something for everybody. So I'm sure we've got a couple of things that you love, Paul.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm sure you do. I mean, I've been around a long time. I was a disc jockey, so I played a lot of music from a lot of those people that would now be considered, I don't know what they would be considered, but I saw Barry Manilow doing his 100th performance, or maybe that was Billy Joel too, but a big performance at Radio City. I mean, these guys have been around a long time, and they never seem to stop. Tell me a little bit more. I love the fact that you have a bachelor's degree and a master of business administration from the University of Michigan. I went to the University of Michigan, never did nearly as well as you did with your master's and all that, although my daughter Sophie is in the Ross School of Business, so I'm proud of her and with that. And then what else did you do before you became involved with the 313 Presents as Detroit's premier live entertainment company? What else?
Well, I spent a good chunk of my career across media, sports, and entertainment, and very lucky to have the opportunity to move to New York and work for Lorne Michaels and Saturday Night Live.
Oh, boy.
And got to work at MTV and the National Football League. Very excited for the draft coming up on Thursday. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to do what I love.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. How'd you make your way back here, back home?
It's interesting.
You did say to me, and I should point this out, four generations of Detroiters.
Yes, the Handler family, four generations in Detroit. But I felt like I could stretch out and pursue my career goals and was able to do that in New York City, but was approached with this opportunity to run 313 Presents, which is a joint venture between Chris Illich and Tom Gores, encompasses six venues in southeastern Michigan. And I thought, what an incredible platform to bring some joy into people's lives and to really be a part of this great renaissance that's happening in Detroit.
And how smart were Chris and Tom, of course it goes without saying with their success, but how smart for them to grab a guy with a bachelor's degree and a master of business administration from the University of Michigan, which is not what you'd normally think of running a concert venue. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities in our business, and so lots of different types of education. But yeah, it's good to have that maize and blue background.
Now, I don't know if this is something that you wanted to do, or if Mike Parsons, my producer, came up with this idea. It says here, you just heard Barbara McQuaid talk about her new book, Attack from Within, How Disinformation is Sabotaging America. And you just watched the presentation with Barbara, and Jocelyn Benson was the moderator. And so he's asking, I never would have thought of asking you this, give me a takeaway from what you just experienced in there.
Well, I think that we all have to look out for truth versus loyalty to a tribe. I think that you know, we probably have to work a little bit harder to sift through a lot of the disinformation and a lot of the bias. But ultimately that everybody's empowered to understand exactly what's going on and what's important to them and to advocate for what you believe in.
Well, that makes sense. And that's kind of what they were talking about, I guess.
Absolutely.
I would think.
And two powerhouse, courageous women that are a great part of what's happening here in Michigan. It was a real privilege to be out here.
Well, good for you. Now, you are also a trusted advisor to some for-profit and volunteer boards, including, I found this fascinating, the Professional Association of Diving Instructors, the Drone Racing League, and the University of Michigan Sports Advisory Board. Which one of those do you enjoy the most?
Well, I love them all. The Sports Management Advisory Board, which is part of the School of Kinesiology, is really there to help these students find their way into the sports industry. I love mentoring. I love teaching. That's really gratifying. PADI is a global movement. PADI is the biggest educator and certifying body for divers and dive instructors across the globe. And diving is ultimately about being an advocate for the ocean. So I get to have a lot of fun.
Good for you. 313 Presents, headquartered in the District Detroit. 313 Presents is, as he just explained, a joint venture between Illich Sports and Entertainment and Pistons Sports and Entertainment. Would it be 313presents.com, the place that I should send people to find out what the rundown is for the summer and fall?
Absolutely, and we've got, 100 shows on sale. There's something for everybody. Paul, maybe you should come out May 22nd to Neil Young and Crazy Horse. That's probably a band that you like.
I certainly remember Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Boy, did he just date me. But I'm not a bad date. Anyway, thanks very much, Howard. God bless you. Well, if you ever need an MC or somebody to introduce people, I think the last person I introduced was Bobby Vinton. Isn't that sad? I'm sure there was somebody since Bobby Vinton. Lawrence Welk, maybe? No, I'm not sure who it was. Mike Love? Did I introduce him? Oh, I did. I did introduce Mike Love and the Beach Boys.
Oh, that's cool.
It's the only guy introduced who was actually older than me, as far as I know. Yeah.
Beach Boys are July 5th at Michigan Lottery Amphitheater.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ann Thomas, our boss, is here. That means I got to go. Ann Thomas, our program director. She says, that's enough. 313presents.com. Howard Handler, God bless you. Nice meeting you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it very much. As we continue on WJR. Well, we close out the show, a special one indeed, with Barbara McQuaid, former U.S. attorney, current law professor, University of Michigan Law School, and her book, the New York Times bestseller, Attack from Within, How Disinformation is Sabotaging America. And the moderator was the Honorable Jocelyn Benson, Secretary of State, of course, our state of Michigan. And it wouldn't be right to close out without having the presiding officer, Carolyn Kasson, President and CEO of Michigan Women Forward. Carolyn, nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How did it go?
It was fantastic. You know, the best kind of panels are all women panels. And
well,
so,
you know, I know we're supposed to say, oh, you're absolutely right. But I think that we could equalize that
a little bit. Diversity is important.
I'll say this. A couple of powerful women like that. You must be a powerful woman, too, to keep everybody in order as the presiding officer.
I did have to tap people to stop talking on the back.
Did you?
I did. But you know what? They're so thoughtful, and we are so lucky to have here in Michigan two incredible women who know so much about disinformation and know how damaging it is to our society. So I felt very blessed to be able to do this.
Well, good for you. And frankly, we have a lot of very powerful women in Michigan, including you, Carolyn, as the CEO of Michigan Women Forward. This organization, is this the one that was started in 1986 mm-hmm. by Mary Jo Pulte?
Yes, it is.
Tell us how that happened. What was that about?
Well, you know, this was a time when the women's movement was new, and she put together a group of women, bipartisan women. This was the day when, you know, Republicans and Democrats could talk to each other. So mm-hmm. Mary Jo and Millie Jeffries, who was a Democratic woman involved in the labor movement, and the governor's wife, Governor Milliken's wife, Helen Milliken, got together and said, let's start an organization that that levels the playing field for women. And so that's what we've been doing ever since.
Yeah, you know, when I came back to home like 30 years ago, I'd been at WJR for years before that, so it's about 35 years. But when I came back to do the morning show, it was now Congresswoman Debbie Dingell who said, you know, Paul, Michigan is kind of like a men's club. It's kind of like all guys. It's an all guys club, which is why I started, and I don't know if anyone ever noticed, but it's why I started mentioning the wives.
Uh-huh.
Every time I had someone on that was important or involved in business.
Good for you.
I went out of my way to find out what their wife's name was, and I would say, hey, please give our best to whoever.
That's great.
I hope that helped a little bit break down the barrier that made us just a quote-unquote guys club.
Well, Debbie Dingell's one of those women, right? Decided that she could do a good job in Congress as her husband did. So that it did help, and she was one of the early organizers of Michigan Women Forward.
Oh, she was,
and she's still an active, involved member. We've honored her several times, and with these Women of Achievement Encourage Awards that are coming up, and so she'll hopefully, if she's not in Washington D.C., she'll be here with us on Tuesday, June 4th at the Huntington Place.
This is Woman Up and celebrate. Tell us about that.
Well, what we think is that we really need to celebrate the incredible women that are in the state. And so we have an event in West Michigan, but the one that's coming up here is on June 4th with Faye Nelson and Rachel Trotstein Stewart.
Excellent.
So these are two women who have had great careers and are very successful, and we're going to be honoring them and celebrating them. And hundreds of people come. This will be at Huntington Place. So, you know, we can fill Huntington Place with women celebrating other women.
So where do they go online to get more information and to sign up for this?
It's miwf.org. And you'll click the tab that says Women Up and Celebrate.
Give me those initials again.
miwf.org.
miwf.org. miwf.org. Well, you must know, of course, our longtime producer for me, executive producer, now, most importantly, as our program director, Ann Thomas, came up with an idea a long time ago that we have embraced and
yes.
done year after year after year, Women Who Lead.
Yes, I was one of them. I'm sure
probably,
you remember.
well, I was at every one of them, but I don't remember every one.
Yes,
but
was fantastic.
You were probably an early one.
Yep, I was.
And how many years now, Annie, Women Who Lead?
14. See?
14 years, and I've been there for every one of them. We all embraced the idea and thought it was a great one, and it's just taken on a life of its own.
Right.
But, of course, as you know, taking on a life of its own means somebody in charge and leading, and that would be Ann Thomas.
It would have to be a woman, right?
Well, in this case, I think so. I mean, it was, and it is still
right.
to this day. And
she
I'm
does
glad,
a great job.
I'm glad that you were one of those because you, too, are a woman who leads.
I like to think I do. I like to lead. I think women like to lead when they're given an opportunity. I think it's they do a good job. They lead a little differently than men sometimes.
Yes.
But they do a great job. So.
And it's better to just step back, especially as a husband, to have the woman that you're married to lead because she's better at it than I am.
Absolutely.
This is Kim is just better at it than I am, and I admit that. I understand that, and I'm so happy to have her leading me in life. I mean, she's important. I mentioned the other day, my mother, Sweet Marie, Kim, Ann Thomas, who okay. we referred to as my work wife for many, many right. years, could have been my work mother. I'm sure she felt more like a mother than a wife. And then, of course, I've got my Sophie, because, I mean, these are important women that I am surrounded
right.
with. And
that's
our,
right.
And our other children and all that.
That's why you've been so successful, Paul. That's why.
I know that it's helped me greatly because, frankly,
right.
they had to put up with a lot of stuff because I was not around because I was out trying to be successful.
Right.
And then you need the mom, the wife, to hold everybody together when dad is out working all the time. So,
because mom's working at a job and at
right.
and at home, so that's
absolutely
that's great.
Right.
Let me tell you one last other thing. I want to be sure we talk about.
Yes.
Is that we also run the Michigan Women's Hall of Fame, which a lot of people don't know about.
No.
But we induct every year nominations from the state of Michigan. Anyone can nominate. So I think you have a group of people there that you just named. You should nominate one of those people to be in the Michigan Women's Hall of Fame. And we're taking applications now, and you go on that same website, miwf.org, and you go to MWHOF, which is Michigan Women's Hall of Fame, /nomination, and you can nominate somebody. So I want all of your listeners out there to think of somebody who's made a huge difference in this state and nominate.
Start with miwf.org,
yes.
and then you can find it and follow it. Because if we give too many initials out there, we'll get all confused. Great to have you here, Carolyn Kasson, CEO of Michigan Women Forward and a Detroit Economic Club board member, and she was the presiding officer of this great meeting today. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to the team. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.